So this is our final podcast, the final Filmwork podcast edition. It is a film club edition talking about one film, and there is only one of us left to do that job. So enjoy this last show. So it has finally come to this. Me, a microphone, a podcast, and my favourite film of all time, Heathers. Yes, some of you who have been listening all along might be going, but I thought Blade Runner was your favourite film. Yes, Blade Runner is the best made film, in my opinion, and it is in my top 10, probably at the number one spot. Heathers is the film that I called my favourite film from the moment I saw it up until about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when I forced myself to look at all the films that I had seen and spreadsheet the hell out of it and mark everything and rate everything and redo it a second time and re-rate them and from different angles. And then, you know, Heathers came down a slot or two. It's still in my top 10. Don't you, don't worry about that, but it is emotionally, the film that I was probably the most connected to as a teenager. It came out in 1989. I saw it after that. I remember the trailers for it. The trailers didn't mean anything to me. I thought, that looks weird. I eventually got around to seeing it in the year or two that follows on video. And I was underage. I didn't hit 18 until I was until 1994. So I reckon I was maybe 15 or 16 when I saw this. So we're talking 91. Sort of time. Had I seen Christian Slater and other stuff? Definitely I had seen him in The Name of the Rose. I am not sure if I had seen Pump Up the Volume, because Pump Up the Volume was 1990 and it was probably about the same time. I may have saw it and then went back to watch Heathers, or Heathers may have galvanized me in the direction. But it was certainly, this is the time when I became the big Christian Slater fan. Even that goddamn skateboarding movie, Gleaming the Cube. But also Winona Ryder, who I very much did fancy. And it took me until sort of the mid-90s to figure out that as much as I liked the look of Winona Ryder, I wasn't a fan of the films that she was in, with the exception of Heathers. You know, Beetlejuice maybe, but I've not seen Beetlejuice in ages. Christian Slater I clung on to, though. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, you know, I was gutted that his role was so small, considering they should have, and considering the character he's playing, he should have had way more to do in that. I love the fact that he took over from River Phoenix, who had passed away, to fill in the role of the interviewer in Interview with the Vampire. You know, cartoon roles he was doing. He did Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest, played, you know, a pixie. Reteamed with his Samantha Mathis for that, who was also in Pump Up the Volume. Yeah, so, you know, I was all over what he was doing. Absolutely loved the stuff. Even what was it, Tales from the Dark Side, he did one of those as well. Young Guns 2, which we've covered on here. Star Trek 6 we covered on here. Mobsters, Cuffs. So clearly there's a lot of stuff there from Christian Slater and the both of them as well. The director I didn't know. I mean, this was essentially his first feature film, Heathers. And I would also say about this time, I'd just gone into, and I was also just coming out, and literally in a 2-year period of seeing all the John Hughes stuff. I didn't see them at the time they came out. I was too young for them. So it was when, you know, they started coming along on video or pirate video to in my direction. I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off just came out of nowhere and just landed on my lap one day on video cassette. Knew nothing about it, watched it, and it changed my life, because I was going into that stage of life, and I was at high school, And I had a couple of friends, and we were, just going on about this stuff. And that went right through into my early college days, where I'd meet people that had also sort of cottoned on to them, like 16 Candles and what have you. But certainly First Day Off, and definitely The Breakfast Club. The Breakfast Club I'd seen on TV, so all the swearing was cut out. So for the longest time, I had a copy of it with no swearing. So when I got hold of the proper video when I was at college and was had a part-time job and could buy stuff, it's that had a second run with me. It was like, oh my God, there's all this swearing in here all of a sudden as well. So terrific stuff. And then Heathers comes along, and Heathers was sort of the it's not anti John Hughes, but it's certainly going in a completely different direction. It has its own vocabulary. It's one of these films where teenagers talk in a specific way that you don't hear in any other film. I mean, Bill and Ted kind of had that, but it was much more of an Airhead type thing. That would then be adapted by the likes of like Kevin Smith. His characters, Jane, Silent Bob, had a way of communicating that is just that only happens in their films. Heathers, that there is a vile way of speaking. That you only sort of get in this film. Fuck Me Gently for Chainsaw is obviously the one that comes to mind, that people will know. But I mean, it's not just about the coarse dialogue that stands out in this film. There's some things that I found quite relevant. I mean, I myself had been moved in my youth from one country to another. So I'd seen a couple of schools in my time, and also. I mean, you have your primary and the sort of the younger stuff you go to when you're much younger, but then you in you sort of then do the middle school, then the high school, and I did that sort of in quick succession over different places and different times, so different countries and then different towns and then different grades. So I'd had a bit of change happen in a sort of 3 or 4 year period, so which kind of weirded me out, because even when I went to middle school, the same people I went to with that didn't necessarily go to the same high school I did. So there was always change going on with that. So I think when I heard the line from Christian Slater, whose character himself has been moved around, and when he runs into what he just considers to be the same old shit, his line is literally seven states in seven schools, and the only thing different is my locker combination. And I love that line. It was great. And even he admits himself, I'm sorry, I'm feeling a bit su superior tonight. But it really sort of keys into the worldview that his character has, and he being the outsider, the loner, but he's also the cool guy, the mystery stranger that Winona Ryder hooks up with, and you get introduced to both of them in the opening scene. But I mean, obviously, the narrative comes from the point of view of Heather, sorry, Winona Ryder's character Veronica, who hangs out with the three girls, each called Heather: Heather Chandler, Heather Duke, and Hera McManara, and they are the popular clique, and we get to see that the nerdy cliques, the dopey cliques, the jocks, the two wonderful school bullies that are in this film as well, and Harry for the acts, and it's all in this extended opening sequence set in the diner. I mean, after the opening sequence with the croquet, so they're in this cafeteria at school, and it weirded me out. It was like watching a weird sort of play. Not that I guess too far akin from The Breakfast Club being a play with characters. This one, you're being introduced to the different social groups and how they interact with each other, and certainly how the top clique, being the three Heathers, reacts to each of them. As well as getting to know them, you very quickly get to learn that Kim Walker's Heather Chandler is an absolute rich bitch, and just thinks the world of herself. Heather Duke Shannon Doherty is suffering from bulimia, and sees herself as the weakest member of the trio. But she, in the latter parts of the film, as we know, will then go on to lead what is left of it and become, the next bitch, as it were. And then you have the cheerleader member, Hera McManara, in the background as well, and then Veronica being the sort of fourth leg of this little team. It's it weirded me out, because when you're watching John Hughes movies and then you go to this scene, you kind of go, "What the hell is this?" And I actually got through most of the film Heathers not realizing how much I was enjoying it, but asking way too many questions because it was such a surreal and different experience. But it's the first film where I had the experience of the moment the last scene happened, I rewound it, as you had to do back then with videos, and played it immediately again. And a lot of it was on the basis of Christian Slater blowing himself up outside the school at the end. That blew my mind. That scene alone really just made me went, wow, that just had an impact on me. I am watching the shit out of that right again, right now. And then second time round, I had a completely different experience, and loved it from start to finish. And it instantly became my favorite film that I had to just keep going back and renting from the shop. I had to keep conning this poor woman behind the desk, even though I was underage, to let her, to let me have it. But it'd already been on the shelf for a couple of years, so it wasn't like it was in demand. It was just sitting there. So she was making her couple of quid out of it, I guess, for each day. I think one day I held on to it a day longer than I should have, and felt incredibly guilty because I was that kind of a person. I like to return stuff on time. Went back and paid the extra fee, and like anyone cared. But I think it got to the point where I had to convince them to sell me the tape. And then eventually, catch it in the shops when I went to college and finally bought it. I think I had another copy of it at some point, and then DVD finally came along, and then suddenly DVD for America with extras. I remember that being a fiasco because it was the artwork wasn't very good, but you had the disc would either come with one of the Heathers on it or Veronica, and I managed to get the one with Veronica, and a mate of mine got lumbered with one with Shannon Doherty on it, I think, and he was really pissed off, and he wanted the one I had. And then bizarrely, I go and lend mine out and never get it back from someone, but never mind. But then eventually, I waited for it to come out on Blu-ray, and my other half actually bought it for me on Blu-ray recently, and surprisingly, none of the bloody extras are on there. Quick note on the extras: it's definitely worth getting a Blu-ray or a DVD that has the extras because the documentary is good fun. You get to hear a few names dropped like Heather Graham and Brad Pitt, and I think even Jennifer Connelly. Oh, God, that just would have been a dream. Being considered for roles. But also, there is a director, writer, and producer commentary, which is well worth listening to as well. And both Christian Slater and Winona Ryder do show up for the making of. It's like, one day they need to do a goddamn commentary, goddamn, because they're both big fans of this film. And rightly, they should be. So basically, second viewing changed my life. And it is a high school film. And the underlying sort of theme throughout it is, being popular at school, how you are seen in the social sort of status quo of this the school, but not just the other kids around you, but also the teachers and the parents. And some of the stuff written for the parents and the teachers in this film is just magic. It truly is. I mean, Veronica has literally, there's a couple of scenes where she sits down to say hi to her parents, and it's exactly the same scene. They follow the exact same pattern each time, and it's hilarious. It's basically just how they touch base with each other, without really sort of doing it, without really communicating. And then you see that come to a head later on when she actually does lose her temper with them, and then that, they argue back, how dare you think that we don't pay attention to you, and then suddenly they'll go stand up straight. Her mother in particular, it really does make me laugh. And she'll shout at her and put her in her place and be like, well, you'll live, and then suddenly she'll completely change her tone, smile again, and say, want some pate? Some great stuff. But I get you have to give the medal for the scene stealing adults to the teachers at the school, especially when they have their little congregations, they have their staff meetings, and you've got the principal who is just fed up and grumpy, so the other teachers who are just sort of half awake and not paying attention, and then this airhead hippie of a teacher who wants to make a difference and unite these kids with love and outpouring. Some of those scenes are just absolutely trivial and very quotable as well. sexually perverse photography exhibits involving tennis rackets, and all that nonsense. Yes. So, but the story itself, I mean, you basically what they think is happening is that teenagers are killing themselves. I think teenage suicide is becoming a thing, whereas actually it's Winona Ryder and Christian Slater hook up and decide to play a prank against the head Heather Chandler. I'll come to that in a minute, but just to focus on some of the other social groups, you've also got, I mean, I guess at the bottom of the barrel is the character of Martha Dumbtruck, whose name keeps getting mispronounced by everybody. And it's basically the obese girl with, unfashionable hair and lonely at school, doesn't have any friends or anything, that gets picked on. She gets picked on right at the very beginning. And you get to see, because Winona Ryder apparently has a habit of doing other people's handwriting easily. So they've got the Heathers have got a habit of making her write notes from one student to another and then watching the reaction. And they do that to Martha Dumbtruck. They basically forge this letter from a high school jock to her saying that he fancies her, and then she picks it up and she reads it, and she actually goes to the guy and hands it to him. He reads it and just laughs in her face, and then she runs off, embarrassed by it all. And there, I mean, the Heathers find it hilarious, but Veronica instantly, feels the guilt of, oh shit, that was the dickhead thing to do, which a lot of us have, potentially done. I know I have, where I've done something, I've been cruel to someone else, and then you instantly regret it. But you can't go up and admit or apologize to them, because it would just, probably make them feel worse and make you feel worse. You just have to live with the guilt of it, and then try and be a better person next time. JD doesn't have that problem. He doesn't see. I mean, he has a problem with the high up social groups. But usually when they come to him, because in that opening scene, Veronica does approach him, and they clearly have a little bit of magic. But she asks him a stupid question that been asking everybody, and she likes his response. They have a nice little chat, and then she buggers off. And then the two jocks that quite fancy Veronica and the Heathers go up and try and get in his face about it. And I love Christian Slater's reaction, especially the shot that just looks down on him, where he hasn't even lifted his head to look at them. His eyes have sort of lifted up, and it's almost like he's frowning at them, just like, really, I've got to listen to you fucking guys talk to me, and has no problem throwing an insult back in their face when they demand a response from him after they've insulted him. And they actually, these two idiots have to actually look at each other like, what the hell did that guy just say to us? And so they try to up the ante, but like, what the hell did you just say? And then Slater gets up and pulls a gun out and fires it into the camera twice, and you're just like, what the fuck? I remember first time around, what the hell is this I'm watching? Of course, he's fired blanks, but I had never seen that before in a film where a student just whips out a gun and fires blanks at two high school bullies. I want to know the aftermath of that, because literally it cuts straight to the Heathers talking about that and JD getting in trouble for it by the teachers. But I want to know. And this is obviously the thing that the writers very cleverly get around, of actually what did actually happen immediately, because surely those two guys would have piled on him and beat him together. But, that it ruins the scene. It ruins the magic of it, but it's great. But going back to JD specifically, he doesn't look down on any other social groups. He's happy to talk to anybody and hang for anybody. And even at one point when you've got a big love-in going on with this hippie teacher, he goes and sits in the corner. He's minding his own business. He's enjoying it, but he's minding his own business. And then he meets Martha Dumbtruck, and he treats her as an equal. He doesn't look down on her. Well, aside from the fact that she's just crawled out from under a table next to him, but aside from actually looking down on her, he doesn't look down on her. And that's cool about the character. I think that's part of his charm and why you like him. But he is also the rebel, and he likes to rail against the authority. And it's when you get to know more about the history of his character where it becomes even more comically bizarre, because he lives at home with his dad, and his dad is now a widower. His wife is dead. So basically, JD's mum has passed away, and then you learn that basically that she's committed suicide because the dad is a demolitions nut job and loves blowing shit up. I mean, it's great. I mean, you'll see the dad just like come in and interrupt the kids, and him and his son have this weird thing where they talk to each other through each other's words. So the dad will come in and be like, "Hey, Dad, how's your day?" You know, basically wanting his son to say that, and the son will be like, "Oh, not now, Tiger. I'm busy." You know, pretending to be the dad. They've got that sort of weird dynamic going on, which is pretty good. But the dad will just come in and like stick in a videotape or be like, "Ha ha, look what we did today!" And he'll show video footage of a building that's blown, that they've just blown up and destroyed. And there's one wonderful scene where he's basically won a court ruling where they want to blow up this hotel and some bunch of people want to, not have that happen, but they win in the end. So the dad comes in after winning this, and he's like, "Aha, we beat the bitches!" And he shows the video of the thing blowing up, and he explains what explosives he used in the basement in order to make this happen. And he just got glee in his face. I mean, he looks like that crazy doctor from the Rotten Tomatoes movies. And he gets his tape at the machine, sort of holds it to himself, and sort of looks up to the sky and says, "You know, some days it's great to be alive," and then fucks off. It's really funny. So you find out that obviously JD has come from a nut job family, and the mother has, being married to this guy, has committed suicide. Basically, a few minutes before one of the dad's buildings was due to blow up, she walked in to the building and waved goodbye to her son from a balcony, and then boom, she was gone. So that, you know, that's his issue, which makes him go on to be such a murderous teen. And it's cool. I like that. I like that sort of backstory for him. Veronica is more of a whiner and a complainer, and pursues words to sort of intellectually sort of get at what she needs to say to us, and we get that through the form of a voiceover diary that she does. You see her writing in her diary. She wears a monocle. She sits cross-legged on her bed, wearing baggy shirts and stuff, and will just, you know, write in this diary, scribble down, you know, what she wants to put in. I'm always distracted by her chest of drawers because they've got punctuation marks for handles in those scenes. But the two of them, you know, nevertheless hook up and literally jump in the sack or on the croquet lawn, should I say, together the first night, and basically comment on the fact that you know, she doesn't like her friends, and he doesn't like her friends either. So the final embarrassment comes from her for her when she gets dragged to a college party and she gets too drunk and throws up and embarrasses the main Heather. So after hooking up with JD, they decide to play a prank on this Heather, and they go to well, they do basically poison her drink that they take her in the morning. So they go to work, and Heather's lying there, you know, just beautifully laid out on top of her bed with her gown on and like 15,000 pillows behind her because she's a little fucking princess. And she wakes up, and you know, they offer her this mug of stuff that's got basically liquid drainer in it as well as milk or something. Or is it just that? I think it is just that. I think they were going to give her, you know, milk and eggs, and that was an orange juice, and that was going to make her puke. But instead, they just give her a liquid drainer that makes her tongue go blue. And basically, they do just call her chicken, and that is what makes her drink it. Even though she calls it out, she's like, "What do you think? I'm just gonna drink it because you call me chicken?" And then she immediately goes, "Give me the cup, jerk." drinks it, chokes, sticks out her blue tongue, and then goes smash through the glass table in front of her, and she's dead. So on the spot, they have murdered their school colleague, and now they have to cover it up. So, and from there on, it expands. You know, they take this effort. I mean, JD is thrilled, but Veronica is way against this sort of thing. But that doesn't stop her still hating the other people around her. So even at the funeral for Heather, they you know, you got more bullying going on. There's the bullies outside, and there's lots of just gay this, gay that sort of references, fag this, fag that being thrown out. So I don't know how well the film would stand up today, but I don't mind it. Basically, she ends up on a double date with one of the other Heathers, who then gets date raped, and the two school jocks. And that's when JD comes in to do his Seven Schools and Seven States speech. And it's at that point where they decide to pretend to do away with the two school jocks in a gay lovers suicide pact, which actually turns out to be a proper murder job from the part of JD. He knows what he's doing all along. Veronica stupidly suckered into believing that it would just be a prank and they would be knocked out. But no, they actually shoot them and they kill them and set them up. But and there's someone, and that's where that relationship starts to fall apart with JD and Veronica, because he's just on a murder spree. But it's wonderful to watch the dialogue that happens sort of between and after that, because even after that, once they've driven away and they're tired and knackered and they wake up, she decides to do the old self-inflict some pain job, and does this by sticking the car lighter into her palm. So yeah, a bit of self-mutilation going on in there. The hilarious part about that is the fact that although JD knocks it out of her hand to stop her from burning herself anymore, he then takes her hand and uses it to light his cigarette. And I don't want to spoil too much more about what happens in the film, although people will have seen it by now. Suffice to say that, a breakup ensues and he tries to get her back. And then he comes up with this grand scheme of blowing up the entire school. And there's some wonderful stuff that's going on here. There's a wonderful montage sequence where Shannon Doherty is then getting put into a position of power as the next Heather in charge. Winona Ryder starts to have a sort of breakdown, tries to hang out with people that she used to know from years gone past. So I think that's where we get to meet the Estevez sister, Renee Estevez, as Betty, and then JD working his charm on Shannon Doherty's character to make her do his bidding. And it's all leading up to this fake petition that is actually going to result in a mass school suicide by them blowing themselves up, which no one is aware of apart from him, of course. And then Veronica getting wise to that. Just some of the sequences that happen, because you have her imagining Christian Slater then coming to see her and wanting to kill off the next Heather who's in charge, and then them doing that. This is all a dream sequence, and the look of this film, the way that it's been directed, and the music by one of the Newman boys, David Newman, is terrific. We actually gold starred the soundtrack to this film and also this film, so it's no surprise that this film is a 5-star rated film. But you get the weird sequence where they're at the funeral for Shannon Doherty's character, and it's all lit neon lights, and everyone's sitting there with these white gowns on and 3D glasses on. It's such a bizarre sequence, such a bizarre scene to have put together, but it really works. It really does look terrific. And then in reality, she decides, right, the only way I'm going to get rid of JD is if he thinks that I'm dead. So she fakes her own suicide and he walks into her hanging body, says that wonderful line. He's upset because she's done it, and he's like, "I loved you. Sure, I was coming here to kill you." But first he was going to try and get her back. So the final sequence, where it's basically her having to confront him in the cellar, the basement of the school, is also terrific. And this is where things really start to get. If things weren't dark already, they get even darker. I mean, she blows his finger off, for Christ's sake. I mean, he's there shouting "fuck you" at her, with his hand extended and his finger sticking up, and then bang, the fucker just flies off his. Off his fist, and it's hilarious, but it's gross at the same time. And you almost feel that it's anticlimactic that he tries to go for her with a knife in the middle of this conversation, and she shoots him down. And you think, oh, that was a bit, okay, all right, fine, fair enough. Yay, she had to save the day, I guess. And the bomb has been stopped. He accidentally stabbed the bomb, and it's sort of beep 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 beep. It's sort of just sort of paused. And then out she goes, and everyone's upstairs celebrating, doing other stuff, and she's, all covered in muck and bloody, and she's like, oh, thank God for that. We're all still here. So she walks out the front by herself. And then this is where the film, had that moment of genius for me on the first time round. As she's on her way sort of down the steps, the door opens behind her, and he walks out. And he's all fucked up. And he's like, boy, you did a good job. I mean, she's like, oh, she can't believe that he's still alive. And but then he very quickly reveals that he's not there to confront her again. he's there to, you know, admit defeat, as it were. But he's going to go out in a more of a sort of redemptive way. He's going to give her what she wants, and so he reveals that he now has the bomb strapped to him. So he walks ahead of her down to the bottom of the steps, and you know, basically makes his last speech to her. A lovely little last speech as well, which is pretty cool. You know, now that you're in heaven, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? Yeah, you know, and there's that great shot where he goes, right, okay, you know, it's like, here we go, and touches the bomb. It's going to count down from 10, and he raises his arms out. It's like the Jesus Christ pose, I guess. The camera pans up behind him. He's got that great long jacket on, and then she's in the background, standing on the steps, waiting. But the one great thing that she gets to do, the one last sort of fuck you, but I love you at the same time, but fuck you thing is, knowing that he is going to blow up, her response to all his speeches is to pull a cigarette out, put it in her mouth, and wait for him to light her cigarette. which he duly then does. Yes, we cut to the sports hall where everyone's celebrating inside, and then you hear the bomb go off in the background, and everyone's like, "What the hell's that?" And then cut back to Veronica, surrounded in all the smoke that eventually clears, and her face is completely blackened up, the hair's a mess, and the cigarette's sort of like been lit all the way halfway down one side. So in she goes, and yes, there's a new sheriff in town. Things are going to be different with her in charge now. So she removes all authority from Shannon Doherty's character, and then says fuck the prom, and is going to go hang out with Martha Dumbtruck, who is at this point now in a sort of a little wheelie machine, because she herself actually tried to commit suicide, sort of 2/3 of the way through the film. So yeah, it's a very, very dark horror black comedy. You know, suicide, and then you know, social categories at school, and yeah, I don't think it's lost any of its charm. And because it's shot in such a colourful and weird and wonderful way, it hasn't dated. And because it has its own kind of dialogue, that also means it hasn't dated. And because it's fairly adult, I mean, I think these days it's probably a 15 in this country, but it was an 18 originally. But because it's fairly adult in theme, and in language, and in humour, that also has helped to sort of, you know, stand the test of time. So, and it did go on to be a cult classic. I'm glad that I was there pretty much before most of my friends had seen it. So it was nice to sort of push it on to a few people and just watch people's reactions. And some people are like, yeah, that's cool. And other people are like, my God, that's fantastic. So I think when it comes to listing, you know, what are your best teen or high school related films, this one, it's always nice to see this one on there as opposed to something like Clueless. And I always get annoyed when people go, yeah, this influenced Mean Girls. All right, Tina Fey may have liked Heathers and it influenced her, but Mean Girls is nothing like this. Absolutely nothing like this. I saw Mean Girls based on the basis of, oh, this is going to be this is the next Heathers, and yeah, I just wanted to hit whoever it was that said that to me, or whatever magazine I'd read that in. Yeah, I do not agree. I'm not necessarily saying that Mean Girls is shit. I didn't like it, but I'm not saying that it's an awful movie, but I'm saying it is nothing compared to this, and it is nothing like this as well. So there you go. But yes, so it is still the one that I sort of cling to. So, you know, whatever mood I'm in, what's your favorite film, Heathers or Blade Runner, one or the other? But Heathers is most definitely in my top 10. I think once I had rated everything about it, style, look, the content, the direction, writing, etc. I mean, yes, Blade Runner is a much better made film, and probably is a better film for me. But yeah, this is definitely in the top 10. So there you go. And it was nice to finally get around to talk about it. So I won't drone on anymore. But and I missed so much stuff that is in this film. I'm literally decided to do this one from memory. For, oh, I better watch it again. And then I was like, no, I know this film so well, I can do it from memory. But it would be interesting to see, listening back, what I missed. But there you go. So that is it for film work. And thank you very much. Thank you for listening. And good luck. This is Stephen Hurst, last surviving member of the Film Work Podcast, signing off.